Congressman Chris Pappas, 1st Congressional District right here in New Hampshire, calling on President Joe Biden to take executive action to do more to secure the southern border. Congressman, thanks for joining us on Good Morning Hampshire, the Pulse of an H.
Hi, Jack. Good morning. Good to be with you.
Thank you. Well, tell us a little bit about your concerns here, because you're joining a number of Democrats calling on President Biden to do more at the southern border. Take it away.
Well, thanks for having me on. And look, it appears that we're at an impasse in Congress to get bipartisan legislation over the finish line. And that's something that I'm not going to, ignore here as we move forward. We really need Congress to act, to give the president new authorities to reform a broken immigration system and to surge resources to the border that we know poses a security threat to our country. But in the absence of that kind of comprehensive reform, which has come over to the House from the Senate, we're going to continue to push for that. I urge the president to take whatever steps he possibly can right now under existing authorities to secure our border and to make sure that we have a more orderly process at the border. So I joined with a few of my colleagues, sent a letter to the president this week. We actually just heard an announcement yesterday that he plans to announce a new rule that would affect the asylum system. That will be announced later today. We don't have the details of that, but I do hope that he's looking at how we can, reform this asylum system, which just has seen a surge of folks crossing into this country. You have people that are waiting years before they get their case heard.
Yeah.
I'm hearing that it's possible that he will make a change that will allow a fast tracking of folks that are identified to be a threat to this country and have been deported right away, as opposed to having them wait around to get their claim adjudicated. That's just common sense. It should have been happening already. But that would be an important step, and I hope he can look at other authorities that he has to address the broken border.
Well, I was going to ask you, it seems like regardless of the recent attempt with a bill, an actual bill, that got kind of sidetracked due to politics, that this is something the president could have done sooner. Why do you think it's taken this long?
I don't know, and I think that the administration needs to act with great speed here. I've got a bill that I've introduced that would look to develop a comprehensive plan for our southern border to understand all the threats and the resources that we have available. That actually hasn't been done in a comprehensive fashion. We have that sort of a plan for the northern border. So really, they need to sharpen their pencils with respect to their short and long-range planning here. And utilizing all the authorities that they have. We have seen a 40% decrease in the amount of illegal crossings since the record numbers at the end of last year. But we know we're still at an unsustainably high rate of illegal immigration into this country. And that poses a range of threats, both for Americans as well as for the individuals that are undertaking a dangerous journey to get here. So we should be using all the tools possible. We should be allowing people to apply for asylum from their home country so that they don't have to travel here. And take every step possible to create a more orderly system of immigration and more order along the border.
Quick hit out of the gate, Congressman Chris Pappas, 1st Congressional. Before we let you go, I wanted to get you mainly on that, sort of not on the talking list, or at least my end, but one of our listeners just wanted me to ask you. There was a story this week, just a general news story, people worrying that, well, officials that look at the budget, and of course we know we have a huge debt. It was almost 35, 34, something trillion. But Social Security, Medicare, namely Social Security, a lot of listeners, you know that, Congressman, and you're just listening, heard stories. You know, at some point, this is not sustainable. Do we need to turn up the heat and an alarm on addressing this in Congress in a bipartisan way, which is almost impossible these days, looking at our programs like Social Security and Medicare to make sure they're solvent in 10 or 15 years or less?
Without a doubt. And, the increase in debt and deficit has been driven by a lot of the automatic spending within the federal government. And we just had a report this week from the administrator of Social Security who said that if nothing is done before 2035, the system will run out of money and we'll have to reduce benefits. So we've got, about a decade here to solve this, and we shouldn't be waiting till this gets to a crisis point.
Right.
In the 2030s. We should be putting together a bipartisan commission right now to put ideas out on the table that can help us shore up the system. It's been done in a bipartisan fashion before. If you remember back in the 80s, led by Senator Dole and Speaker O'Neill, they forged bipartisan common sense reforms that shored up Social Security. We can do that again, but we need people to get around the table and not wait till the 11th hour.
Thank you, Congressman Pappas. A quick news update on looking at the southern border and more ways to secure. Thank you on this Thursday morning. Good morning, Hampshire, the Pulse of an H.
Thanks, Jeff.
John Decker, thank you for your patience, our own White House correspondent. Talking about, you know, we know Stormy Daniels is back in court today in Manhattan. I'm just chuckling a little bit because he can't make this stuff up. And we'll see how credible or what happens on the testimony of that witness. But also, these other cases, John Decker, you're a legal eagle. Georgia, Florida, are they going to stretch out beyond November?
Yeah, I think the only criminal trial that Donald Trump will have to face between now and November the 5th is the one that he's dealing with right now, the one in New York City. It seems really unlikely that there will be a window for prosecutors to put on a case against Donald Trump in Fort Pierce, Florida, for the classified documents case in Georgia, election interference, or here in D.C., election interference. The one that could potentially be on the calendar is the election interference case here in Washington, D.C. But you know what, Jack? That really depends on what the Supreme Court decides in that case involving what Donald Trump claims is absolute immunity from criminal prosecution. Depending upon what the Supreme Court decides there, that case could potentially be on the calendar before November. But I think that chance is very slim.
John, you know, I didn't really think that would be the case because in a strange way, this could be actually more than a little bit of good news for Trump because he'll be able to focus more in the final few months on the election versus all these court appearances.
Well, that's exactly right. Right now, yesterday, for instance, no trial, day off. Donald Trump, for whatever reason, deciding not to campaign like he did the prior Wednesday. You know, prior Wednesday, he was in Michigan and Wisconsin. Yesterday, back at Mar-a-Lago just for the day. He'll be back in court. He is back in court today for the hush money payments trial, and we'll hear Stormy Daniels back on the witness stand for more cross-examination that will take place during the course of this morning.
Can you only imagine if there was a TV camera there? Thank you, John.
Oh, I wish there was. Absolutely.
John Decker. Thank you, John.
Good luck.
There's a wonderful organization known as the Para Rescue Foundation, all one word, .org. Pararescuefoundation.org. And they do so much to help veterans nationally. And what's really cool, and we love our Delta Force teams in the Army, or our Night Stalkers, if you've heard of them. And of course, you know, Navy SEALs, very much exposed through movies and books. But you know what? The most elite combat trained operators, special tier operators, the highest level that actually rescue lives all around the world. They are the best of the best, United States Air Force. We're looking, I'm talking right now to you, the business owner, you, the company. I want you to step forward. Go to their website. We're going to bring in the executive director, Ron Lennis, right now. Ron's going to talk a little bit about their annual activities, who they are. But go to their website. We're looking for a few companies and businesses to step up. $2,000 or $3,000 a year. You can talk to Ron about annual philanthropic giving to support this elite community. And we want to grow their presence because we have some of these retired PJs, they're called, living right here, like Tony Negron in Barrington, New Hampshire. You've had him on my show, a good friend of mine. Ron, I'm going to let you take it away and tell us about who the pararescue operators are, the great work of the foundation. You're the boss. I want businesses to go to your website today and call me offline, 603-228-2080, to support the number one level of special operator, highest level tier rescue operators. Take it away, Ron.
Good morning, Jack. Boy, that's quite an intro. Thank you for having me on today. Appreciate it.
Well, you are. Yeah. You work with the best of the best there. They're very humble. A lot of people don't know the name PJ, and they really should, because we're talking the supermen of rescue. And anyone who needs to be rescued, I don't care how high in the air, how deep in the sea, how deep in the mountains. Take it away, Ron.
Jack, you give me quite an intro. That was fantastic. You know, the pararescue organization, Pararescue Foundation, we support United States Air Force, PJs, and CROWS. PJs is an acronym for pararescuemen. CROWS are combat rescue officers. Together, they form the military's best of the best combat rescue service members there are in the world. So their job is to find downed pilots, downed service members behind lines or in tragedies or emergencies and bring them back home, bring them back to safety, sometimes render medical attention as necessary. These guys are quite incredible. We've talked about them many times. The Pararescue Foundation is here just to support them as a nonprofit that does things that the typical military benefits can't provide. Mm-hmm. So we do things for them to relieve the burdens of physical and mental abuse that's born from service. We're there financially in times of tragedy. We're there to support them as they transition out of the military, and we help their children of the fallen with some educational benefits, all of which we wrap up into some legacy preservation work we do for them and supporting graduations, memorials, whatever it takes to promote the pararescue community and take care of them the best we can.
And, Ron, I know around the country you have these events where the public can come meet these folks. My goal is to eventually have one right here in New Hampshire. I know Tony Negron, who lives in Barrington, has been on my show, and I think he's going to join us next Wednesday for our Make 12 Hours Count for Veterans Count. He's got an amazing story of leadership in this community. But, you know, it's amazing when I'll say to friends, do you know what a PJ is? And they're like, I've kind of heard of it, but I'm not sure. And then to understand their training and their extra training, whether it's in the mountains, high up in any aircraft or in the water, they are, and I think of movies like, you go back to some of the Coast Guard rescues, but Navy SEAL rescues, you know, when you see that helicopter come in, pilot's been shot down like in Bosnia, there's a PJ or two on that craft, and they are the ones that will, whether it's going down ropes or jumping out or jumping in the water, that are going to rescue, whether it's a highly trained fighter pilot who's been shot down, a family who's been taken, it could be in the you know, the Somali pirate lanes, or in a mine in another country where a soccer team's been trapped. It's the pararescue people. Ron, why is there such a, not a mystique, but, you know, my goal is to connect more businesses to your foundation and grow it right here in New Hampshire, New England. It's a great opportunity for a company that wants their employees to get involved and really support a level of the military that saves lives and support their efforts, because we want to grow it right here, and I'm supporting this. So, Ron, what's, why, not saying the mystery, but there is a little bit of a mystery to PJ pararescuemen.
Yeah, this is a special operations team in the military, and, you know, almost every special operations group, you know, they consider themselves quiet professionals, right?
Quiet,
their
yes.
job, yeah. Their job is to save people no matter the obstacle or challenge or circumstance or environment. That's the job, and that's what makes the pararescue model so alive. It's these things I do that others may live. They'll do whatever is necessary to save a life and jump into any problem that needs to be solved. So special operators in the military, it's not uncommon for them to be quiet professionals. They have a never-quit attitude. They'll jump in and do whatever is necessary at a moment's notice, and then walk amongst the rest of us as if nothing ever happened. They're never after accolades or, you know, applause, if you will. That's the job. That's what they're trained to do, and that's their personality. So for that reason, most people don't know what a PJ is. You ask them, what about pararescue? They go, well, that sounds like people have jumped with the parachutes. Well, that's close as you can get, but yeah. That's where PJ came from, is para-jumper.
Oh, okay. Okay, and, that makes sense, yeah.
And pararescuemen, you know, the career field was born in 1945 and then cemented through the Vietnam War, where you really needed to parachute into enemy territory to mm-hmm. save people.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, I think of that. Oh, go ahead, Ron.
Oh, I'm just carrying on. This is a soapbox for me.
No, I love it. I love it. I'm thinking of one of my favorite movies, and I love Gene Hackman. And J-Dog, you'll think of him. He's a very popular actor, blonde hair.
Owen Wilson.
What's that?
Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson plays the pilot shot down behind enemy lines. And Gene Hackman is the commander who has to basically finally override the United Nations group on his carrier to go get him as he's being chased by, you know, in Serbia, in Bosnia, by Milosevic's gang and the dramatic rescue. But those were all pararescue. You know, Ron, what I want to do in the next few minutes is maybe have you talk a little bit about how someone can contact you and get to know you and support this mission. I know that there are active teams that will come through New Hampshire into the White Mountains and train through Tony's group that are pararescue operators before they've sort of gotten through everything, but those final kind of get up in the mountains and be shot at with rubber bullets and ropes and save lives and teach them how to, you know, make sure they don't get hurt when they're going after in hostile territory, one of our own to rescue. So even $2,000 or $3,000 a year, broken up over 4 or 5 times. You're looking for businesses to get involved, corporations, business leaders to help spread the word and support veterans. So pararescuefoundation.org. And many business owners will say to me, Jack, we'll support you next Wednesday, but just shine the light. We don't know about this stuff. How can I help? This is how you can help in your philanthropic. If you have, like, for example, a good-sized company to put, you know, in your budget $5,000 or $10,000 a year to support something. These are veterans right in our community, right here in New England. So, Ron, speak to that a little bit. Push people to the website. You have the donations, yeah, but you're looking for companies and businesses to sort of become part of the family.
Yes, of course, Jack. You know, we're a 501c3 nonprofit. We operate on the good graces of our donors and sponsors. And we have programs throughout the year to support our community, namely some of the retreats that we do is a way for us to get somewhere between 8 and 12 guys together. We like to get a combination of active duty, retired personnel, so we get a good group of guys that have similar experiences. Our retreats are purpose-built. We do some activities with them where they can enjoy the outdoors and enjoy some physical activity, but we also include some clinical support people along the way and on the entire event. So when guys have something that they want to talk about, to dig a little into, we have people that are walking step-by-step with them throughout their retreat.
Yep.
So sometimes the way to get to meet some of these guys is when we actually gather at the, you know, the focal point, like in the retreat we do in August in the Presidential Mountain Range in North Conway.
Awesome.
We start there. We gather for a day, do a, you know, a debrief on what the week is going to look like when you're hiking through the mountains and where we're going to go and a hut-to-hut experience. But this is a time where we can have people, you know, come there the day that they're there, the day that they
and
arrive, the day they come back and meet them.
I got to tell you, they are the quiet, most humble, trained, wonderful, incredibly trained human beings.
Yeah, they love to engage and tell story of what they do and how they do it.
Right,
you know,
it's amazing.
There's some things they can't share, but there's a lot of things that they can. And Tony Negron is a friend of ours, and he lives there in that territory, and he'd be happy to host, you know, having a couple of people come by and meet the crew.
Well, I know friends of mine like John Ritchie of Ritchie Construction in Portsmouth got to know Tony. He's seen them in action. This is a great way to step up, step forward. Even a few $1,000 each year goes a long way, but it gets your company or employees involved, almost like adopt a PJ, you know, a para jumper, a para rescue person, para rescueman. Pararescuefoundation.org. Contact Ron directly. Contact me if you want. We're going to continue this story because it's a wonderful group. And you know what? It's great to be quiet and humble and maybe lesser known than some of the other. There's only a handful of elite special operations teams. But as Ron mentioned, when they come back, adjusting to civilian life, supporting a family who might have lost a pararescue person, supporting the kids, supporting the mission, supporting the veteran. This is what you can do. And it's you know what? I'm not saying it's a diamond in the rough, but it's not as known as some of these other branches that we'll talk about. So why not be a leader, a pioneer right here in New England to grow this effort because they're bigger in some other states? So contact Ron Lennis today. You just go to the website. I'm looking at it right now, pararescuefoundation.org. Pararescuefoundation.org. And Ron, I'm not sure I can remember this now. I'm going to let you go, but Tony Negron shared with me a story way back when they were doing like the Superman series. There was actually this, you know, the closest thing they could come up with to an actual Superman who could jump off of a building or out of a perfectly good airplane into the ocean and rescue someone was a PJ, right?
Yeah, that's true. And it's funny that they used to call the Pararescue Pipeline, the 2-year training program, they used to call that Superman School.
Yeah.
And when DC Comics heard that there was a Superman School, and they didn't know about Pararescue either.
Yeah.
That they contacted us and said, hey, we got to know a little bit more about that.
So here you go.
These guys, when they're their 2.5-3-year training pipeline just to become a PJ, that used to be called Superman School.
So you can support Superman. All right, I love it. Pararescuefoundation.org. We have to run. Ron, thank you for opening and shining the light on this. Good luck. You do a great job all around the country. What's growing right here in New England? Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Jack.
Good morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now, back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back. And, you know, 18 years, I mean, that's like Ray Bourque played in the NHL a long time, but 18 years to be recognized as the best is pretty cool. Auto Fair Honda in Manchester, the 18th time, the President's Award. And in that industry from the manufacturer, it's pretty big. But there's also a great time of year with the spring here, believe it or not. Specials, service, convenience, Jason LaCroix. And we just had our State Police segment with the Director of Motor Vehicles, John Marasco, talking about Auto Fair, but the real ID push. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Jack. How are you?
Good. 18 years, but you're only like 30 years old. I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, I've been here for 30 years.
No way.
We have a great team.
No way. But you look younger every year. You run in the Boston Marathon. I don't know how you do that.
Well, I don't know about that. But, great team. They do a great job. I couldn't be more proud of them. Constantly trying to find a way to get better and more convenient for customers and make it easier. So, yeah, 18 years, I'm proud of it.
Well, again, this time of year, we don't really talk about it, but we have to have a good, safe vehicle. And you got all kinds of service deals, convenient leases, options. And by the way, bigger inventory. Tell us about some of the better deals.
Yeah, we have about 200 new cars on the ground, plus 130 pre-owned just here at Honda. And the lease specials there are pretty darn good right now. You can lease an Accord for load 2s, 222, I'm seeing, and HRV, which... You know, we really haven't had many HRVs. We just got a couple shipments in. You can lease an HRV with a little bit of money down for $241. You can lease Ridgeline for $300. I know that's one of your favorites. We got some really great deals, and we have everything in stock and more coming every single day. So back to deal. I love it.
Now, is the HRV just slightly smaller than what I would call the bigger SUV you have?
So it goes HRV,
yeah.
CRV, Passport, Pilot.
CRV is very popular. I mean, it's a great, because it's a four door. You get the hatch. It's a good all wheel. But it has one smaller, right?
Yeah, which is the HRV. And the CRV hybrid was the number one selling hybrid in the country last year. Just a great, great, great redesign. And we have a good selection of those in stock as well.
Well, again, it's right Auto Fair Honda right across the mall in New Hampshire, but. The lease versus buy, I know interest rates make everything a little higher because it spills down. We know that to buy a home today, it's about double what the former mortgage interest rates were. But from the manufacturer and your point of view, a lot of good leasing options, like those prices right there you just mentioned, $241 or $300 for a Ridgeline, are pretty affordable compared to what a lot of people are used to paying.
Yeah, we have low rates on pretty much everything, 2.9% financing on CRV, 3.9 on Civic, 3.9 on Accord. So, yeah, it's the manufacturer needs to move these cars. They're building them, and they're supporting us. So it's all good. Good time to buy. Good time to trade too.
And what is the President's Award? Just overall excellence, service, and customer satisfaction, all of the above.
There are about 20 different metrics, so it really isn't easy. But the team is really focused on. And really making sure that we're taking great care of the customer, trying to make things easy, trying to make things convenient. You know, our service department's the only one that I know that is open 7 days a week, no appointment necessary. You know, we just introduced.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Like on a Sunday? Yeah, wow.
Come on in, Sunday, sure. And they just started 50 minutes or it's free, oil change, tire rotation, 50 minutes or less or it's free. And I also have to mention, we're right next to this brand new South Manchester Rail Trail.
Yeah,
bring your sneakers, bring your dog. Go for a walk, get some fresh air. The weather's getting good.
You mentioned that.
You have a path that brings you right there.
You mentioned that last time you were on, so you can go there less than an hour or three. You can go take a 30-40 minute walk.
Yeah, it's a very pretty trail. I'm excited, but I've been on it many times. They're actually doing a ribbon cutting in a couple weeks, but it's open and ready to be used. So bring your bicycle, bring your dog, bring your sneakers.
You just made me think of it. We'll get the mayor there. If we do something before Memorial Day at the dealership, maybe we can just talk about that walking trail and all the above.
Yeah, sounds great.
All right, Jason. Auto Fair Honda, thanks again. We just had the Director of Motor Vehicles on talking about that real ID push, so mentioning Auto Fair. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Phil Taub. Phil, of course, was on the other day talking about the Greater Tuna Open in the later July, early August. For the Navy SEALs and fish with a mission, swim with a mission. Phil, the co-founder with Julie Taub, but Phil joins us with a political hat on because he loves analysis. He's very good at it. Phil Taub, good morning.
Good morning, Jack. So much to talk about in politics. Don't even know where to begin.
Wow. You know what? Let's end with the presidential stuff, can we? Because this second congressional district, among Democrats, Phil, with Ann Custer not running again. We already knew Colin Van Ostern was in. We already knew Senator Becky Whitley of Concord. And now, kind of a big name, not been in New Hampshire full-time lately, but a serious player, if you will, jumping in. And that race for Democrats is becoming a real primary. Let's start in the second congressional district.
Yeah, I think that really is the biggest news right now in New Hampshire. We've been seeing this playing out in the governor's race, and now we're seeing it in CD2. Obviously, a big surprise, right, with our current Congresswoman Annie Custer suddenly telling everybody that she's not running again after five. This is her fifth term, and then she quickly endorsed Colin Van Orsten, who worked for her as a staffer many years ago, and obviously ran for governor originally against Governor Sununu.
Mm-hmm.
And when he ran against Governor Sununu, you remember that. They cleared the field. The field was cleared. He was the only Democrat. Sununu ran against three very well-known Republicans. You probably remember in that race. And so isn't this interesting, Jack? You know, he, as you said, Senator Becky Whitley jumped in, and now Maggie Goodlander has jumped in. And not everybody in New Hampshire knows her, but she's right. going to be a real force, right? She's married to Jake Sullivan. He's the national security advisor for President Biden. Maggie Goodlander, an attorney. She was the deputy assistant general, right, under Garland. You know, I'm a big fan of the Navy, right? She was in the reserves in the Navy for 11 years. I mean, she's got a very impressive resume. I'm not sure what she's seeing in this race, but got to believe that she's got a chance if she's going to jump in now. And so all of a sudden, a very strong three-way race in CD2. On the Democrat side, you know, not unlike what we're seeing with the governor, with two very strong right. candidates on the Democrat side, you know, going at each other, right?
Right. But, Phil, let's go back to what you're just saying about Goodlander. This is kind of a sea change, profound for Democrats, because typically, and of course, Ann Custer, the retiring Democrat, has, what, six wins of reelection in the second congressional district. Now we know Dr. Vikraman Shermani, Cindy, Lily Tang Williams is the Republicans.
Tang, yeah.
From where, but yep. But the Democrats typically, I'm not saying they get around one candidate, but is this a sign of what's going on nationally with the Democrats? We see it in the Democrat primary, Cindy Warmington, Joyce Craig, that they're having their own philosophical political primary battle, because it never really used to be that. Typically, they would put up one candidate and all the Democrats would get behind him or her. Colin Van Ostern looked like that one candidate. Then Senator Whitley jumps in. Now Goodlander. What's going on in the dynamics, Phil, within the Democrat Party locally and nationally here?
Well, I think nationally we, you know, you always have this sort of struggle, and of course it's playing out all over the country on both sides, right? You've got, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans, you've got folks on the far right or the far left, and then you've got more sort of moderate candidates. Just focusing on New Hampshire, I think if we look back 20 years, the moderate candidates on both sides tend to be the ones that win. And you need it, right? New Hampshire's a third, right? Third Republican, mm-hmm. third Independent, third Democrat. You need independents to vote for you. Governor Sununu is a great example of somebody who pulls, he's Republican, but he pulls independents. He pulls Democrats vote for him, right? And in New Hampshire, there was a time, remember long, more than 20 years ago, when it was Republicans cleared the field somehow and Democrats, everybody ran, and the last 20 years, they've taken a page out of Republicans. It really has just been one good, strong Democrat running against anyone who wanted to run for Republicans. And if you look on the federal side, I think Republicans have only won one race out of the last 14. It's been all Democrats in the federal delegation, right? Kelly, I think, was the only one who's won in the last 20 years. And so now you're right. All of a sudden, what is going on? That all of a sudden, Cindy Warmington, I think, was going to be the candidate for the party, for governor. And then Joyce Kelly steps in. Colin was going to be it for CD2. And now you've got Maggie Goodlander and Becky Whitley. And I look what's going on the Republican side. You know, the fields aren't quite cleared, but I think it's clear that Kelly Yates is, you know, she's winning handily. She's right. going to be the nominee. And Vikram Manishwamy, who ran a very good race, no one ever heard of him in the Senate race. He didn't do particularly well there, but he made a lot of friends. He impressed a lot of people. He's raising a ton of money right now quietly. and all the focus is going to be on the Democrats, but he's going to be the guy.
Well, do you think, Phil, Todd, because it will end with the presidential when you touch upon the gubernatorial course, do you think a Republican can win the second congressional district in November in New Hampshire?
I think the simple answer is yes, right? Charlie Bass was a very successful congressman on the Republican side.
Yeah, but for 12 years, it seemed that whoever ran, you know, Ann Custer was able to keep that seat.
Ann Custer, and a couple of them came very close, right? She's a very good fundraiser. She knows how to work the phones. Of course, when you're an incumbent, it gets a little bit easier. You've got to be a really strong candidate and sort of be united. Some of the candidates have been a little bit too far to the right. A guy like Vikram, you know, went to Yale and Harvard, kind of looks, you know, to the independents and the moderates. Is he a Democrat? Is he a Republican? Like, I think he's going to play very well on both sides of that. Very smart, very strong. And now you have a contested Democrats. Are they going to have any money, whoever emerges out of these three? Let's say Colin Van Orsten wins. Are you going to have any money with 6 weeks to go for the general? I think that's what everyone's going to be looking at. May have not have enough money. Vikram may have plenty of money. He gets to run as a moderate just like Kelly Ayotte does. I do think that there is a window here for a Republican to win that district.
Now, we haven't talked a lot about the first district. I just had Chris Pappas on, Phil Taub, and, of course, Phil by day is a pretty darn good mergers and acquisition attorney for Nixon Peabody, but also co-founder of Swim of the Mission, but doing the political analysis because we do this before elections. Phil, real quickly, first district, Chris Pappas, that was the district, Phil, the Republicans tended, with Rockingham and Hillsbury, tended to have the best chance. And Pappas has beaten the odds, if you will. In other words, sort of strengthening in there. Now, I know we got Prescott. We got other candidates running, Holly Novoleski. There's other candidates. But again, what's going on there? And I want to touch on the Biden-Trump picture. So take it away.
Yeah, I think what we've seen over the last few elections, you know, Carolyn Leavitt was a very strong candidate. So was Matt Maurer's. Carolyn had to run to the right. That's not what the district wanted. And Pappas is just getting stronger and stronger and stronger. I think with each new term, you know, his record is getting longer. He's doing more. People are getting to know him even better. He's getting really hard to beat right now, to be honest. You know, there's a time we thought he might run for governor. He's clearly decided he wants to stay in CD1. He's really dug in. I will say this, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, he is doing a good job servicing the electorate in there. You know, doesn't matter if you're a Republican, Democrat, if you need help. His team's doing a good job. He's getting really hard to beat. Holly Novoleski and Russell Prescott are both good candidates. You know, Russell Prescott's very well known in the state. He's a very nice guy. Holly, you know, business owner. She's a veteran. I mean, on paper, she's an outstanding candidate. I don't know who's going to win out of Holly and Russell. I don't know who's going to win that race. It's probably too close to tell.
Right.
But that's a very steep challenge. So, I mean, everything has changed so much in the last couple months with us thinking CD2 was definitely just going to be a re-election for Annie Cusson. Now it's a wide-open race, and the Republican has a chance.
Right.
And on, you know, CD1, it looks like Pappas is going to win again. I think the tougher one is Biden going to win for the third time against Trump in New Hampshire?
Let's come back then and end with that, Phil. We get a couple minutes real quickly. You know, it wasn't too long ago that even Chris Sununu, and, you know, now saying he'll vote for Trump, even saying people are going to forget these trials. We're now hearing that Georgia and Florida may not even happen before November. So this might be the last courtroom stuff, the incredible drama, Saturday Night Live stuff of Stormy Daniels in the court of Manhattan. But my point is, Trump's looking pretty good in these CNN and ABC news polls. This people used to say, oh, he can win a primary for sure, and he motored through all the primaries and become the nominee, but he can't win a general election. Now even the CNN poll says, yes, he can.
Yeah, he's definitely leading in the polls. What a fascinating couple weeks. He's sitting in trial. There's a lot of embarrassing stuff coming up every single day. You know, it's all over the national news. It's all everybody's talking about. While he's doing that, the Biden campaign has very smartly put Biden out there, tackling some tough issues. They're struggling with the Jewish community. I think the Jewish community may actually abandon Democrats, you know, in this election and vote for Trump, just given everything that's happened in Israel. The campus protests are really hurting Biden a lot. The economy is killing Biden right now. The consumer confidence index is the lowest it's been in 4 years. They haven't lowered rates, as you were just talking about before I got on this segment. The border is killing Biden. There's a lot of stuff going on there while Trump is sitting in trial. But I think the biggest thing is, you're right, Jack, this trial is going to be over. It's going to be whatever it's going to be. It's probably not going to be any more trials now before the election. Mm-hmm. And Biden's taking his shot and doesn't seem to be landing any punches. It's going to be just a few states, right, that determine who wins. All of a sudden, I think Biden may not win New Hampshire. I think if the election was today, even though he's beaten Trump the last two times, he didn't come here and campaign to try to take the First Nation away, the economy, all of these things. It may just be enough. And then you've got strong candidates down ballot. Kelly Ayotte, now Vikram. You know, you've got some very strong candidates. It's going to be very close, but Trump may squeak out a win in New Hampshire.
And of course, that has profound impact at the state house, the House of Representatives, the Senate, the governor's race, because, of course, wide open governors. Excellent. I think we covered all the bases, Phil. Excellent stuff, Phil Taub. I appreciate it very, very much some expert political analysis and all-star. Thank you, Phil.
I appreciate it, Jack, and I appreciate the plug for some of the mission. Obviously, veterans is not a partisan issue. It's about everybody,
yes.
Right,
oh, yeah.
For veterans.
Big
so
time.
Thank you for everything you do for veterans. We appreciate it.
Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Junk fees. What is this all about, Aaron?
Yes, it's nothing good. And now we have the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau coming out and saying, yes, these not only are rising, but that the fees that we are being charged, according to the data, ends up making us go without much more than the businesses. The businesses are winning. We, the consumers, are losing. And they're getting away with this, not because the market is letting them, because they're lying. The sticker price is not what the market is dictating. The price they're giving you, basically double whatever you paid for your rental car or whatever. It's everything from food delivery to bank overdrafts to event tickets. Double the bill almost, and that's what it is. Now, the market, would no one would buy that. And most people don't look at those line items and then dispute it ahead of time. What they do is just look at the big sticker price, and that sticker price is nowhere near what you actually end up paying.
It's all the hidden stuff, right? I mean, it's all the fine line stuff, and that, oh my goodness, whether it's in healthcare, what is this bill? What am I paying? Well, how much does this cost me? Good luck trying to find it, right?
Right, exactly. And that's what irks people so much, and what really makes them feel bamboozled. It's, yes, very annoying for your pocketbook and not good, but it's that surprised feeling, the feeling of unfairness, that makes you lose a customer forever. This is according to psychologists and marketers. This doesn't work. And also, Biden, not saying this will get him reelected, but the idea of going after junk fees is a winning position for sure. There's not one person out there who's like, "No, what? I kind of like junk fees. I'm cool with it." No, everyone hates them, and that is what he is really just, you know, staking his stumping block on, getting rid of all of these junk fees. And it's a winning position, but it doesn't mean he's going to win the presidency. But it kind of shows how much people are fed up with this. And now you have Congress introducing a bill. They want to limit and eliminate excessive and hidden and unnecessary fees. This is a slippery slope. But oftentimes the businesses did them to it themselves. You have similar legislation in New York and Illinois and in California, but it's hard to say, no, this business can't charge this and charge that from a federal level. That's not a good idea. But when you're being nickel and dimed and ripped off all the time, this is where you find yourself.
Yeah, it's interesting. Aaron Rial, always, always good stuff. I don't know how you do it. I appreciate it, Aaron. NBC News. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack. Have a good day.
Lucas Meyer, straight to the dome, one of our political analysts and all-stars on the Democrat side. Lucas, that second congressional district of Democrats growing now to a pretty interesting picture. Take it away.
Yeah, we had the announcement this morning that Maggie Tamposi Goodlander has thrown her hat in for the CD2 race, joining former executive counselor Colin Van Ostern and State Senator Becky Whitley. So three candidates, all under the age of 50. Maggie is 37. I've been friends with Maggie for a while. Pretty excited about her candidacy as someone who's worked in the state to help elect young people into local and state office. It's pretty exciting to have, all the candidates be what I call New Hampshire young. But Maggie being 37 to have the opportunity for New Hampshire to have a millennial representing the state in Congress is particularly exciting. And she has a pretty unbelievable resume for a 37-year-old, having served in the Navy Reserves for 11 years, a Yale law graduate, served at DOJ, in the antitrust division, was a big piece of President Biden's competition agenda, mm-hmm. you know, making sure, you know, the big corporate monopolies aren't price gouging us, that there's competition in the market. And then in her announcement ad this morning, sort of a longer introductory video, talked about some personal health issues she had with a late pregnancy that did not work out. So she also has a very compelling personal story to tell about the moment she's in, the Dobbs decision, the impact that had on women across this country. So a real exciting new dynamic to this race, and obviously given her her husband is Jake Sullivan, the president's national security advisor. So a really wide political network, but also a really strong in-state network. Her mom, Betty Tamposi, ran for Congress in the same district in the 80s, where I think it was a Chuck Douglas. He said, you know, a woman's place is in the home, not the house. And her grandfather, who brought a bunch of industry to the you know, Route 3 corridor. So a really, you know, impressive resume. I think it's going to add a whole new dynamic to this race.
Right.
But it's still early, so we'll see how this all starts to shake out, but certainly another spotlight in New Hampshire for this congressional race.
Well, I have to say, Lucas Meyer, that and you don't, I don't expect you to nod, wink, or agree or disagree, or maybe disagree, but Colin Van Alstyne certainly can't be thrilled. Maybe he can be, but tell me how he's thrilled that now he's got not one but two serious competitors.
Not happy would be my guess.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a primary. I mean, I think he's probably a little surprised given the timeline that he created. He and Congresswoman Custer created with a really short runway for candidates to pull a team together, pull a campaign together, and launch. And I imagine this was not something he had on his bingo board. Maybe he did. I have no idea. But certainly, definitely not excited this morning about this development would be my guess.
Now, it's interesting. Cindy Warmington making some noise, you know, challenging Kelly Ayotte to a debate just the other day or a week or two ago. Kelly Ayotte on my show saying she would debate Warmington. Of course, Cindy Warmington in the governor's race wants to debate Ayotte on her abortion rights record. Ayotte said she'd happy debate on her pharmaceutical days of, you know, in terms of, you know, I guess representing big pharma. And it's interesting, these two have kind of linked a little bit. Yesterday, when I asked the AI campaign, would you debate Cindy Warmington ahead of the primary, they had a response. But my point is, you've seen Joyce Craig either engage Kelly Ayotte or Ayotte engaging Craig. But we haven't seen really Craig and Warmington engage as much as they have with one of the Republican candidates. Of course, Chuck Morris, former Senate president, is also running. It's interesting. Are we going to see Warmington and Craig engage a little more each other in the primary or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think if I assume the Warmington campaign spot is by going after Ayotte, they'd like to position themselves as if they were the general election nominee. So it's a tactic. I mean, we certainly will see the all three of the gubernatorial nominees or candidates, be it Joyce Craig, Cindy Warmington, or John Kuiper, out in more forums and debates. There was something out in Exeter that was not a debate, but more of a forum where they were all in the room together. So I think as the summer progresses, especially at these local Democratic or county committee meetings, I expect there'll be more of those opportunities. But, you know, each of these primary candidates wants to project strength, and so they're going to go after Kelly Ayotte, who they assume, correctly, I imagine, that she will be the nominee and that she's a strong nominee mm-hmm. from the Republican side. And so folks want to be directing as much of their attention on her as they can and not within the primary. So that's my assumption there.
Yeah. Before I let you go, I know it's polls are just a snapshot in time and they come and they go, but we had not one, but two, CNN, not Fox, and then ABC on the national side. Not great pictures, just being objective here, for Joe Biden, maybe a little better for Trump, because, you know, and I know, Lucas, it wasn't many months ago, even Governor Sununu was saying, well, Trump may win the primary, but he cannot win a general election. When you look at these polls, Biden does better than Trump on abortion rights and health care. But then you look at the economy, inflation, southern border, war situation, Israel, Hamas, Ukraine, crime, law and order. Trump does double digit well. And I know, and the other thing no one's talking about is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was in that poll of the ABC poll scoring 12%. And you and I know, regardless of what you want to say about Kennedy, he could play a spoil role. It probably takes from both. But what's your take on the national stuff 6 months away?
Yeah. I mean, I think the Kennedy stuff is really interesting. One, you're seeing the Democratic Party really taking a much more organized approach to how they handle the third-party candidates, especially RFK Jr., in so much that it's not necessarily pulling him down as much as it is creating wedge issues with Trump world or pushing him into Trump world. So I think your point about we don't really know who RFK is actually going to pull votes from yet, I think is really interesting and where I'm keeping a lot of attention on, because I think you are starting to see RFK as the education continues and as mm-hmm. the Democratic Party continues to educate Democratic voters about, hey, this guy is talking about having worms in his brain, that they can make him appeal more to Trump voters. So I think that's a really important dynamic to watch. I also think, I forget which primary happened. There was a primary that happened last week or this week. Nikki Haley is still pulling 15-20% of Republican primary votes. I haven't heard from Nikki Haley in months. I think that is a big concern. I think if Biden was, you were seeing the same numbers for Biden in some of these races, that would be a very big narrative and has been a narrative in certain states. I think Trump still not being able to consolidate his base is a real big problem for him. And then as these lawsuits and these trials continue, I mean, the Biden campaign is only going to get stronger from here, in my opinion. So the polls, you're right, a snapshot in time. I mean, I think you saw the president in Wisconsin either earlier this week or late last week in Racine, where President Trump announced a couple years ago and during his administration that Foxconn was going to move in. It was going to be the eighth wonder of the world, thousands of jobs. Deal fell through. Biden shows up this week saying, hey, Microsoft is going to open up a brand new AI facility here, delivering on those jobs. And that really matters because we know that this presidential election, we can look at these national polls. It's going to come down to a handful of states and a couple, tens of thousands of votes in those states. And Wisconsin is one of those states. So I think you're starting to see the Biden campaign catch its stride. There will be political headwinds for sure. And those are very real. But I think if I'm picking a team right now who's in a better shape for November, I'm still feeling pretty good about the Democratic Party.
All right, Lucas, I appreciate it. If someone wants to contact you for any and all of the above or just contact, best way?
Lucas S. Meyer on Twitter or catalystadvocacy.com.
Hey, oh, by the way, because you love football, have you seen the Brady roast on Netflix? I mean, it's sad that it's actually making news, but what's that?
Brilliant. I mean, look, I am not a Tom Brady guy, but
wow.
I give his PR team a lot of credit. Get him out in public a couple months before he starts commentating on football games. It's a bit of like therapy for society just to like make fun of him. So
but that all the political correctness and the woke and the inclusive, that was a political nuclear bomb.
That was a good old fashioned. I remember watching those old roasts from
that
like
was like
70s.
A cannonball. That was like the cannonball in the pool. I mean,
it was fun. And hey,
wow.
Look, Tom Brady got paid $30 million to do that. So look, he already made up all of his crypto losses. So not a bad way to make $30 million for Tom Brady.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Thank you, Lucas.
Thanks, Jack.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Rory, I was thinking a profound thought on a Thursday. And good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I was thinking what a profound thought. What are we going to do in a few weeks without Stormy Daniels or Donald Trump in a Manhattan courtroom? How are we going to get by? Or better yet, how is CNN going to get by, Rory?
We're going to have the Olympics.
There you go. Good answer.
There you go. Well, it's going to be one convention, then the Olympics, then the other convention. And lo and behold, it's going to be October. We're complaining about the Halloween candy prices, and here comes the election.
Yeah, really. So what's the latest in New York?
Well, the Stormy Daniels is back on the stand. She is the subject of cross-examination now. So the lawyers for former President Trump are asking her questions. They're asking her about her line of products that she sells, suggesting how she has made money off of her dalliance with Donald Trump back in 2006, allegedly. They're also talking about some of the posts that she's made online with comments about Donald Trump and whether or not she got him indicted. So they're really going through a lot of her background, a lot more detail here about what happened back in 2006 as well. So we're not beyond this yet. We're not through to the other side when Michael Cohen is expected to be on the stand next week.
Oh, my goodness. The former lawyer, the adult entertainer, or whatever you call Stormy Daniels, and the former president, presumptive Republican nominee. If this isn't on Saturday Night Live, Rory, this week. Now, is she standing up to be a credible witness for the prosecution?
One thing is that the former president probably not going to testify, but nothing really to rebut her claims about what happened in Lake Tahoe. Now, are they undermining some facts about her story? The testimony is different from the book. It's different from the videos and the documentary. You know, so there are inconsistencies, but is she being totally undermined? I'm not sure. And again, don't forget the jury's not going to consider all this for about another 3 weeks when this trial ends.
Yeah, and then we heard from John Decker, one of your colleagues, our own White House correspondent earlier. The Georgia stuff, the Florida case, these may be pushed out till after the November election. So if you like seeing Trump in court, and I know the CNN ratings really like it, maybe a while.
Yeah, or maybe never. If Donald Trump wins in November, then those federal cases would go away.
All right, thank you, Rory. Interesting.
Thanks, Jack.